It's fun to be inquisitive. Be nosy. Stick to your passion. Find out more for yourself. Quest is fun. Join me, 13 years old Tristan Pang, on a journey of inspiration. Welcome to Youth Voices.
Hello everyone, welcome to my program. This is your host, Tristan Pang, on Planet FM 104.6. Youth Voices, good to have your company on this Wednesday afternoon. I have special permissions from the NBR Radio Sunday business presenter, Andrew Patterson, for replaying his interview with Dr. James Doty. This is the final part of the interview, so here we go.
Born into extreme poverty, the son of an alcoholic father and a mother who was clinically depressed, James Doty's early life growing up in a small Californian town was characterized by a state of continuous chaos, frequent evictions, and little hope that his future would amount to very much. That was until a chance meeting at the age of 12 with the mother of a local shop owner who, over a period of 6 weeks in the summer holidays, taught him a series of life lessons that would see him go on to college, become one of America's leading neurosurgeons, amass a fortune of more than $76 million, only to lose the whole lot in the dot-com crash of early 2000, an outcome, as you'll hear, he believes was one of the best things that ever happened to him. It's a story of courage, perseverance, but most of all, resilience in the face of sometimes overwhelming odds. And it forms the basis of a new book James Doty has written on his remarkable life called Into the Magic Shop. It was one of those books I literally couldn't put down, ended up reading it in a day, and it's a reminder of the courage of the human spirit to persevere to achieve the outcome it ultimately desires. Today, you're a professor, as you mentioned, in the Department of Neurosurgery at Stanford and the director of the Center for Compassion and Altruism Research and Education, where you research the neuroscience of compassion and altruism. You're also a philanthropist funding health clinics throughout the world, having endowed scholarships and chairs at multiple universities. Tell us a bit more about your motivation for establishing this center and what you're learning about this area, which I understand has received very little in the way of academic research to this point, which perhaps is surprising.
Well, it is surprising because, of course, at the core of our humanity is compassion. And it's interesting that we have to prove the value proposition of being kind and caring for others. But that being said, in a secular society, if you're going to impart different teachings or techniques, they do wish them to be validated by science. And I don't want to imply that I'm the only person who began research on this, because, in fact, there's been interest in this probably for more than a decade or longer before I became deeply interested in. But that being said, we are now probably the most prominent center in terms of really focusing on this. And what we've learned is that by the nature of our evolution as a species, nurturing and caring are absolutely critical, because our species requires us to care for our offspring a decade and a half or longer than many other species. And the reason is that our species or our offspring have to model our behavior, and it's a long time. And the reward for a parent caring for that child, they are rewarded in pleasure. Because what happens is when you care or connect with another person, you are rewarded by something called oxytocin or other neurotransmitters that are associated with the nurturing pathways. And the nature of that results in increased metabolism in our reward centers. And the same as if we receive food or engage in sex or in modern society obtain money, but it's even stronger than that. And therefore, when you are of service to others, connect with others, it makes you feel good. And also what happens is it shifts you from the stress mode, which is very common to occur in modern society where you have so many distractions and events coming at you compared to how we lived on the savannah in Africa. It shifts you from that sympathetic nervous system input to the parasympathetic system. And when the parasympathetic system is engaged, it's called our rest and digest system. Our blood pressure goes down, our heart rate lowers, our peripheral physiology functions better, our immune system functions better, those hormones that are associated with the stress response go down to baseline, and if you can live in that state, then it's associated also with increased longevity. So, in fact, when you live with a compassionate intent, that is how you were actually designed, or we were designed as a species. What gets us away from that is actually a couple things. One is stress. when you're stressed, again, as I said earlier, your executive control function is impaired. You don't make rational decisions. You are not as productive and you're not as creative. And additionally, cardiac function's impaired. Your peripheral vascular function's impaired. Your immune system's impaired. And overall, again, these have a negative effect. The other thing is another part, if you will, of the baggage of our evolution, including sort of an excessive stress response that still really affects many, many people, is something called tribalism. When you get stressed, there is a tendency to shut down. Again, instead of being open and, if you will, behaving in a manner to connect with others, you have a tendency to exclude others except people who look, act like you. You pull in. You don't share your resources. You are afraid. And potentially, you're violent. Now, this worked wonderful if you were competing with another tribe somewhere in the world 200,000 years ago, but it's not an effective strategy in modern society. And in fact, it stops us from connecting with others. And as we have seen, certainly in the U.S. and our political affairs presently, you know, we have an individual who is utilizing a narrative that separates people, that implies one group is better than another, that one group is not deserving, and makes them fearful and anxious. And as a result, they pull in, and then they say, well, we need to concern ourselves with us, and we're important. And as a result, there's a whole anti-immigration narrative that's going on. There's a racist narrative going on. And because we are so attuned to threat, and it's unfortunate. And the techniques that we have developed and teach actually can decrease that sense of threat for people. But unfortunately, naive people who don't understand how these narratives are so toxic buy into them, and they're just not true. The only way we're going to survive as a species is to come together and not to separate, because the reality is there is only one human race, and there's only one planet, and there is no planet B, if you will.
When we look at the science of what you are discovering versus the, I guess, the feel-good factor that people have always known that comes from giving, what you establishing is that we are hardwired to be giving individuals, and for that to be part of perhaps countering stress and some of those other negatives that you've spoken about.
Exactly. And it is these techniques, and I alluded to programs that we have at Stanford and others have been developed, and that we know that we can decrease people's stress and anxiety by teaching them certain techniques that result in the autonomic nervous system shifting from stimulation of the sympathetic nervous system to the parasympathetic nervous system. And when that happens, that is the place where we function best and when we connect the best. And while probably somewhere between 40-50% of our compassionate potential is a manifestation of our genes, the other part is a manifestation of our environment. And when we can create the right environment, it allows us to potentiate whatever capacity we have for compassion, and it changes lives. We know that when people see others act compassionately, it has a positive effect on them. We know that when people act compassionately, it has a positive effect on themselves. And it's a chain. And again, whether it's in the domain of the self and the benefits that I have alluded to, or whether it's in the domain of education, where we have seen in preliminary studies, by teaching compassion and emotional intelligence or emotion regulation, we see decreases in violence, improved academic performance, increased attendance. Whether it's in the business sector, where we see increased productivity, increased shareholder value, increased stock price, decrease in costs associated with human resources and health expenses, or whether we see it in regard to the healthcare environment, where it decreases burnout among healthcare personnel and improves the patient experience. And even in the civic government or the social justice environment, juvenile justice system, or the prison environment, we've seen a multiple examples of imbuing those environments with compassion, dignity, where it decreases violence and decreases recidivism. And while the scientific evidence is still early, there is no question that there is a positive impact. And this isn't surprising based on how we've evolved as a species. And frankly, if you just think about it, geez, if I'm nice to people, generally speaking, they're nice to me. It's not 100%, but certainly it's more likely than not.
And James, when you reflect on your remarkable life, I wondered if you reflected on the randomness of meeting a single individual who, perhaps without that meeting occurring, your life would never have turned out the way it has.
Well, you know, this is what many of us don't appreciate. I mean, as an example, in Silicon Valley, there's some extraordinarily successful individuals who are bright young people, and they have achieved immense financial success, yet they believe that that success is because of how great they are. And the reality is that while they may be smart, oftentimes that success is a manifestation of circumstances coming together that are not necessarily about them. And they just happen to be in the right place at the right time. But suddenly they know all and believe that they know everything and everything's about them. The reality is there's not a single one of us who has not been affected by others intervening typically on our behalf or contributing to our success. And there's no question also that I could have not walked into that magic shop, and it is entirely possible that I would be pumping gas somewhere or maybe have died of alcoholism. I don't know. There are others who would say, well, Jim, you had sort of a certain characteristic that allowed you to be resistant, and no matter what events would have been in your way, you would have overcome them. Of course, none of us will ever know that, but I would say that I am extraordinarily thankful to all those who've been helpful in my life. And every day I thank them. And that's what all of us should do. Have gratitude for those who've helped us. Have gratitude for our experience. And this isn't to say only if you, you know, are quote unquote hugely successful or become a professor or live in an expensive home or have a job that pays you lots of money. That is not success. We should be thankful that we've grown up in an environment and had the opportunities that allow us to be thoughtful, to be kind, to connect with others, and to have food, shelter, and security, because we know if you have those things, that is more associated with happiness than all the money in the world. Money, power, prestige does not protect you from cancer. It does not protect you from natural catastrophe. It doesn't protect you in terms of relationships. The only thing that does that is love.
And just finally, there's the obvious question listeners will have, that you did attempt to track down Ruth to express your gratitude for the part that she had played in your life. Sadly, she had died some years earlier from cancer, and I wondered if that was one part of your life that you may have regretted not being able to contact her earlier.
Yes, certainly. You know, it would have been nice to say, geez, look what I've become, and thank you so much for taking the time to care. The interesting thing is, as I mentioned in the book, is that it turned out that Ruth had a grandson, and her son, who owned the magic store that I walked into, he had divorced the grandson's mother. And in fact, the grandson, who was about my age, he was supposed to actually be there that summer, and the parents had an argument, and his mother kept him from visiting the father. And it's probably likely that I substituted for that young man and received the benefit, at least during that summer, of Ruth's kindness. And it was that kindness that changed the trajectory of my life. But I would say to everyone who's listening, no matter who you are, no matter your station in life, no matter your position, each of us has the power every day to positively affect another human being. And you never know what that can do to change the trajectory of their lives.
So for today, that's it from me, Tristan Pang. Thanks for listening. I welcome your feedback and your support of the program. And please write to me on Facebook or email me to youvoicesnz@gmail.com. And don't forget to like Youth Voices with Tristan Pang on Facebook. And if you want to listen to my other shows, please go to my website, www.questisfun.org.nz/youthvoices. That's www.quest-is-fun.org.nz/youthvoices. Have a good week. Goodbye.
J.
Join me again for another exciting program next month on the first Wednesday at 2:10 p.m. or listen anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/youthvoices or listen to the archive on my website www.questisfun.org.nz/youthvoices. Youth Voices.